Well, welcome back to It's an Inside Job podcast. I'm your host, Jason Lim, and this podcast is dedicated to helping you to help yourself and others to become more mentally and emotionally resilient so you can be better at bouncing back from life's inevitable setbacks. Now, on It's an Inside Job, we decode the science and the stories of resilience into practical advice, skills, and strategies that you can use to impact your life and those around you. Now, thanks for spending some time with me today. With that said, let's start. Well, welcome back to another episode. As we migrate further into 2022, companies and organizations are learning to become more resilient. Understanding what has happened the last 2 years has shaken things up. The variables have changed, and so have some of the constants. We now are working in a hybrid model. We have to worry about the great attrition, where companies are worried about losing talent as they hemorrhage out the corporate doors. Well, I have someone who could directly answer this in one aspect, and that is understanding the culture and the values that a company holds. To be able to explore and to do a deep dive on this issue, I think it's so important. And that's why today I've invited Tuna Ringstad to join us. Tuna has worked with leaders in large international corporations in Norway and in Europe. She's a trained geophysicist and was part of the Exxon exploration. She's also been director of global HR in Wallenius Wilhelmsen Lines and later built Living the Brand Solutions in Dynamo. She was trained as an executive leadership facilitation in Center for Creative Leadership and delivered leadership programs worldwide. And in 2014, Tuna founded Cultural Intelligence in Silicon Valley. She is now leading a team of 10 highly skilled people who build and operate an SaaS, or what's better known as Software as a Service platform, with a purpose to empower leaders for culture-driven business growth. Now, in our first part of our conversation, Tuna goes into defining operationally what culture is. And her company is data-driven. That means they collect tons and tons of data to understand the values that make up a culture. And one of the things we addressed in this first part of the conversation are these foundational values, how the pandemic has shaken things up, how it's been a wake-up call, where it's created a sorting mechanism, which has forced us as individuals, as teams, as organizations to reevaluate actually what we hold closest to our hearts. And this shifting has changed how we look at work, how we look at purpose, how we look at if we stay or leave an organization. Well, welcome to It's an Inside Job, Tuna. I thought maybe we could begin by you telling us who you are and what you do.
Sure. Thank you for having me, Jason. I've been looking forward to this. Well, I am Tuna Ringstad. I am the founder and CEO of Cultural Intelligence. We are a startup or scale-up company with a mission to make culture easier to understand, faster to change, and much more powerful for business growth. So in that mission, we are seeking to do business with people that want to use the human capital as their first advantage. And we have this systematic approach to map culture, to systemize it, to analyze it, and eventually activate new values to create new cultures. So that's basically what we do. We are 10 people now, three developers, tech team, customer success team, sales team, and myself.
I think culture is one of those things we've kind of taken for granted. It's kind of when you work for, at least from my anecdotal experience, when I'm in and out of organizations, people speak a lot to culture, but it kind of hums in the background. We just take advantage of it. And I think one thing with this pandemic, you know, when everything was locked down and all those things that we took for granted were stripped away from us, such as going to the office and just meeting colleagues for a coffee and a meeting or what have you, just the day in, day out routines of office life. Once that was stripped out, I think when we came back, we actually understood even more important how much culture or that connectivity, that connective tissue between people in an office on a team is so important. I was wondering if you could speak to that a little. How, what is your experience coming out of this pandemic? Because I know you are, your company's in demand, and I think maybe this is something that's being even more of a relevance now.
Yeah, it's super relevant for our customers and I think for society as in general, as you say. So we actually already last summer, we decided to approach this in an analytical form. So we started a study where we took all our data. We have a huge data set now for people that have taken our survey. So we sorted in pre-pandemic, looked at what the data set said then, and then we took all our data that we had done during the pandemic. So we got an analytics approach to what has changed. And as you have seen in our report that we have on our website, if you haven't seen it, we analyze and see what kind of values have been more important to people and what kind of values are less important to people. And actually what we found, it's super interesting because, and it makes sense when you look at it this way, because the more foundational values have become more important. So values like safety, security, economical safety, respect, care, physical health, these kind of things, the very foundational values that we need in order to live and to exist and to coexist with people. So I think this tells us that these values, and maybe in a subtle way that we before took for granted, now have really come to our conscious in a much stronger way and say these are seriously important now. And since our mind has limited, although a large capacity, when something becomes more important, something else becomes less important. So our sorting mechanism has shown us that the values that have become less important are values like cross-functional approach, innovation, achievement, productivity, things like that, that are important values for us in day-to-day business world, they have taken a hit and the foundational values have sort of become stronger on their behalf. So it's really important how, and I think this is a subtle change for a lot of our businesses that haven't really measured their culture. So it and that's kind of the sort of the scary picture in a way, because if you don't know that your team has changed this way, you may approach it in not the optimal way as a leader or as a team focus right now.
I think that's very important because, I mean, organizations, teams, groups, projects, what have you, they have been shaken. And I think that term you say, the fundamental values are so important. It's not that the other ones are superficial. It's just that when things get shaken so much, we scramble for certainty. We scramble, as you said, one of them was security in the sense of safety. And we scramble for those primaries to try to get all that. And it's only, we can only move into adversity. We can only move into change or challenges when we feel we are secure. If not, we're scrambling as individuals or as organizations, I feel, to gain that stability before we can move in. And I think what you're talking about is resilience, but resilience at a bigger level, at an organizational or team level, and how important that is. So I was just wondering if we could just rewind, how do you define what a culture is? Obviously, this part's of value you spoke to, but what would you define as a company culture? How would you define it operationally?
Yeah, we approach this in a scientific way. I mean, I'm a geophysicist and my team are mostly engineers. So we have this a scientific way to do this. And in our equation for culture, where we actually define the core of what a culture is, we define culture as the sum of the values priorities for the people in the team. So let's say you and I and two other people are in a team together. That means that if we can capture the values priorities for each one of us and then aggregate it, we will find the dominating values for our team culture. So looking at it this way, we can not only do metrics, but we can also find what are the strong drivers for this team and how does, and then start to analyze how does this impact us. So when we work with business culture in teams today, we always look at what are the dominating values that are driving the actions and decisions and the collaboration and the innovation and all these things in the team. And we also try to understand what kind of mindset do these values sort under, so we can also understand what are the dominating mindset. Is it a fixed mindset? Is it a growth mindset? Is it a renewing mindset? Is it a visionary thinking in this team? So we can get all these parameters if we are able to capture the values priorities for each and every one in the team that we're looking at.
Because I was on your website, I was doing some background research, and one of the things on your website, it has 70% of mergers tend to fail. And obviously that's some sort of cultural clash, but that's not just mergers, but sometimes you can have two teams or two departments within the same company, and they just have this silo mentality and culture is like, what is that? They have their own sort of subcultures. You know, and also this pandemic has exacerbated things. What's your approach to kind of try to blend cultures or try to create a common culture, or perhaps I'm not even using the right terminology?
It's an interesting way to look at we talk about subcultures because they are the hidden barriers or fences in a business.
Well said.
So each whatever business you have, organization you have, there will be fences, and they fence around either a functionality or a speciality or leadership level or an age group or whatever, and they're there. And what they actually prevent is the flow of information and insight and focus. So the more fences and the stronger they are in an organization, the more subcultures you have. You need to understand what those subcultures are, and you need to try and remove the strength of them and align the organization in a way that will make the strategy or the ambition or the vision or whatever, make that more visual for everybody. So everyone is going in the right direction. So when we go into a company, we first of all look at what are the dominating values and mindsets in the company as a whole. Mm-hmm. And then we start to slice and dice into what are the subcultures and how different are they? And where are the main barriers that we need to look at and shed some light on in order for people to understand that it's natural that these guys over there, they're much different than you are. Mm-hmm. But if you don't align with them, it's going to be difficult to have them in your team and as part of your delivery or whatever your productivity or something. So you need to understand not only the holistic, but you need to try and shed some light on the subcultures in order to understand how to align them and have them to move over in the same direction as a company.
Because I think that is very important what you said, because, you know, obviously a lot of organizations have moved to a hybrid culture where, you know, some people are staying at home, some people are work, 3-2 model, whatever it is. But I think what I've experienced and also what I've read is that what if you keep that too long, or if there's not some fixed rules as how to do that, you can create two different cultures. There's the in-office culture, and then there's the other type of culture where it's sort of the remote culture. Now, I know some companies have been doing this for 20 years. They understand the DNA of how to do this, but a lot of organizations, that a lot of this is new for us, and we don't really know how this is going to play out for those traditional organizations that were completely in office. How do you see that as part of trying to blend the cultures to make sure, because obviously this hybrid culture is here to stay to some extent. From your expertise, how do you see companies, what would you suggest to leaders to create so there is not this subculture happening remotely, that is?
We have looked into what has been published in the hybrid world now. And there's not a lot of data because we haven't really done this before. So the world, the research world, is struggling to find data and to make sense of it all, because we're trying desperately now to understand not only where we are and what happened, but what to do. So and we have picked up a couple of really good papers of the ones that have been published by now.
Yes.
And what we have found is that it seems like that the criteria for success in keeping the office or remaining the interest for the office seems to be to make it more inspirational, more visionary. It seems like now the office is expected to be more of a happening. So the office is more needs to be much more inspirational and collaborational than it used to be. So people don't come to the office now to sort of just do a job. They come there to meet their peers, to be engaged in projects, to talk about purpose. So it seems like the sort of the bar has been lifted in what it means to go to the office. So we have identified values like inspiration, innovation, and vision to be important for people to lead by and to focus on and communicate around when people are in the office. And quite on the contrary side, what goes for what is a successful remote office? Totally different values. You need accountability, you need trust, you need efficiency, and you need a structure to be able to align people that are not in the office but are producing stuff at home or in wherever they are in an efficient way. So this creates, of course, a challenge to be a leader because what your leadership style needs to be a little bit different when people are in the office while someone are not in the office. So this mix, this hybrid way of leading has challenged leaders. And what we believe is that values like openness and learning and collaboration seem to be the three most important values for leaders to generate as a rule in whatever they do. Because if people are open, they will accept that someone are not here, someone is still on team, someone are home, some are in the office, and all that. So the openness will create an understanding and acceptance and obviously the collaboration and especially the cross-functional collaboration.
Yes.
Will be important to have. So this hybrid way of leadership, I think, will be really critical to understand as we go forward, because I don't think people will totally be back in the office. Something has changed around that in the way we operate.
Fundamentally, yes, I totally concur with that. No, because one of the things that I've talked to, you know, my different clients is something called proximity bias. And those who don't speak English as a first language, proximity being distance, bias being a fixed way of seeing things. And proximity bias shows up, I think, especially in traditional companies before this pandemic, where everything was, as you said, it was routine, it was in office. Now we come as an event, as a happening. So that there's been that fundamental shift. But proximity bias is for those leaders that that need to focus to understand that when we have a meeting, some people will be signing in remotely and some people will be in person. And it's to understand that to create that collective understanding that everyone is equal, that I think all those things you're saying, that everyone feels it's inclusive, even if they're checking in remotely, and to have that, because if we're not aware of these biases playing out, they affect our thinking, our emotions, our behavior, how we engage or disengage with our team. And so I think that's a very important, because when you speak to innovation and inspiration and such like that, that with those, would you consider those as fundamental values, or are those, are organizations starting to take in other values now? They're going to more of these sort of more enriching type of values.
These values are more advanced. They are typically in the growth mindset. So and they're far away from the foundational values. So you can maybe look at it. I haven't really thought about this in this way, but you can probably think about it as a balance act to say, how much of the foundational values do I need to address now when people are back in order to have my team function in a good way? And how much can I lift and stretch and approach my purpose or my vision or my innovation ability in order to now get going forward again? So now that the sort of the cloud is lifting, the pandemic cloud is hopefully disappearing.
We need
to pick up speed, and we need to look at things in a new way. So the innovation and the vision and our ability to really reform the way we're doing business is so critical. And yet we are in a worse position than we were before the pandemic. So sort of the gap has been expanded a little bit, which makes it hard.
Now, in the second part of our conversation, we do a little deeper dive in understanding how to bridge the gaps between generations and how the pandemic has affected how and what is important to each generation, whether it's millennials, baby boomers, Gen X's, Gen Y's, and how to do this. We also talked about how to specifically move values and cultures into actions that we can live and breathe this in our day-to-day operations and day-to-day work. And we also talked about how important feedback culture is in instilling and maintaining and operating an organization's culture. And I think one of the important points that your company makes is this cultural clash between, for example, Generation Z and millennials compared to the old guard, like Generation X and Y and the baby boomers. I was wondering, how do we bridge this gap?
We see that the difference, the pandemic has hit the different subcultures differently. Mm. So men and women have approached it a little bit differently. The age generations have approached it a little bit differently. And also the leadership levels. The CEOs seem to have been affected less in a way. And the people that have no reports, people that are not leaders or have responsibility for others have been impacted more with the home situation. And we haven't really understood why that is yet, but we're looking into it. And I think in our research or in our studies, we look for, again, these shifts that have happened and try to understand what they have been in order to be able to work with them and make them good again for businesses. But I think these differences, in order to now align people, which is really what leaders do, the first thing, of course, is to approach why are we here, to not only quote Simon Sinek, but also to identify how important in leadership, first rule of leadership, do people know the direction? Do they know why they're here and where they're heading? And so create this clear and shared understanding of where we are and where we're going. And then comes the need to say, who are we together? And I think that is, it's probably, if I should define one sentence in 2022, it's to understand who we are together, because that has changed so much only for not only 2 years ago, but probably the last half year, in order to figure out how this hybrid world and now with the critical geopolitical uncertainty in the world. So all these things impact us in a huge way. And if we don't hold our finger on the pulse of who we are together, we may miss out on a good way to do things going forward. So all development and all change really starts with understanding not only where you are, but also who you are, in order to build on the people in organization and find a way forward that we can believe in and own and make happen.
I think what you say really resonates with my personal experience working with my clients. And, you know, they sit at different levels in organizations. This pandemic has made us tourists in our own lives. You know, it's shaken us up. We've become aware of those things that we've lost. And those things, as you said, who are we together, or where are we going together? I think that's so important, because it is a direct question to the term psychological safety. Now, I know that can seem like a buzz term, but if you really look at what psychological safety is, and that's what I do from a brain perspective, working with teams and organizations, is bring it down to the nuts and bolts. And I think it's that connective tissue that holds us together, because what we know about social psychological safety, it comes back to the values you were talking about, the three sort of social neuroscience, if I can call it that, values or social rewards is a sense of connectedness, a sense of feeling valued, and that sense of stability. And those three form the foundational principles of psychological safety, at least from a brain perspective. And so what you're saying really resonates to coming back to those values and understanding that. And so that leads me to the question, once a team understands these core values, that's one giant step. But for me, the next giant step is how do they translate that into day-to-day action? Because what I see sometimes when times are okay, these values, they hang out on a wall in a frame and they just collect dust. But now we understand how important it is. How would you suggest to leaders or team leaders, how do they take these values that they've spent time discovering and operationally defining and then moving that into concrete actions to actually create a change in culture or to stabilize culture?
Yeah, that's the $1,000 question, isn't it? And maybe more. We believe that if we understand who we are together, we have a good place to start. And then we ask the question, who do we need to be together in order to be this successfully, to be what we want to be and to make the purpose true and go in that direction. So the second data set that we are looking for to make clear is what are the values in this culture that we need to add? Because chances are that we may not be operating in the perfect form as we are right now. So once we start to say, well, we have a lot of, inspiration, we have openness, and we have collaboration well in place. That's who we are together. But we seem to lack this empowerment value or this purpose-driven presence value. So we don't really have anything in our culture that engages us in a good way. So let's say we wanna do something with that. So we pick out maybe the value of, openness to create more empowerment. So openness becomes our new value. It's not here in our organization as is, but we really need it for the future. So what do we do? If you and I were in the leadership team, Jason, and we were talking about openness as something we had to build, that immediately takes a place in our brain. We understand that there's something that we need to be focusing more on. So that is the first step, sort of the awareness. We know that we need to pick up something. Then we need to find out how far away are we? So let's say you have a high score and openness. I don't. You and I become aware that you have something to offer. I need help in order to understand what it means. So you and I can create some sort of collaboration on how can we help each other to create more openness in our team. And I have a job to do if I don't have any focus on openness. I need to understand what that means, and I need to look a little bit inward in order to say, how can I pick this value up? So in our app, in our technology, we have these 100 values described with learning objects and tips for finding out what you can do in order to build a new value. But it comes down to understanding and accepting that I have a job to do. And if I'm a leader and become aware of that, I don't have a natural sense of being open. Mm-hmm. Of course, I will strive to find out how can I be more open. What more can I talk about? Who can I talk more to? Mm-hmm. How can I open up on my worries or my mistakes or my hopes and dreams and all that? So I become aware that there's something I have to do more of. And then if everyone in a team starts to have that reflection and that learning, you will automatically create a new focus in the team where openness gradually builds to be a natural part of who we are together. And that has shifted from what it was before we started. So the individual values, again, are the sort of the drivers to make that culture shift happen.
And then all those individual values, they as you said, they are the connective tissue of a culture. And so, because what I heard you saying, you asked a number of questions, but as you know, just from my background, those questions are really well engineered because they were questions that asked for people to come up with specific actions. They weren't intangible abstract questions, right? They weren't esoteric, but they were specifically action-oriented, tangible and concrete that leads to action. And I think that is the most important thing, that values get translated into actions. Because when people see what needs to be done, then I think it sounds like you have this faster shift or this faster crystallization of the values. How important is a feedback culture within a team or an organization? Because a lot of the organizations I work in, they readily admit that that's something that they definitely have to work on. How important is a feedback culture, instilling culture and values within a company or a team?
Yeah. If you ask for a number, I'll say 70%. And that comes from the reality that values are around 70% unconscious for us. Okay. So we don't really know what values we have. Mm. So we don't know if going back to the openness value again, if you and I were on the team, if I don't get my score or insight from some sort of metrics or clarifying process that I am low on openness, I don't have a chance because to do anything about it, because I will still believe that I am quite open, because openness is something that our society values. So I believe automatically that I am part of that and on the positive side, until you, for instance, share a feedback or give me a feedback in a good way, in a learning and caring way that says, you know what, when you talk like that, I don't perceive you as open, and that is difficult for me. When that kind of SBI feedback, as you call it, situational, behavioral, and impactful feedback, I have a good way to become aware that I am not as open as I want to be, or that you want me to be, or my team needs me to be. So then I can do something about it. So having a good feedback process is, of course, key to do any kind of learning, which creates the shift that we are after. But again, the feedback is, it needs to be trained. It needs to be caring. It needs to be specific. So if teams aren't trained to do feedback in a good way, it may actually also hurt them or damage them, because it becomes personally hurtful more than in a learning way. So what you're asking or what you're pointing at is how critical feedback is, but how critical it is that people learn how to do it right, so they don't confuse feedback with just open critical comments.
I think that's so well articulated. I think that's so, you hit the nail on the head with that one, because intentionally they may want to deliver feedback and they have all the good intentions, but unintentionally how they deliver the feedback could be like a slap in the face, and people take it as a criticism more than sort of feedback of how they could improve. So I think that's a very important distinction you've just made.
Yeah. And if you look at, you talked about the things that people are afraid of in the psychological safety. And if we go back to David Rock and his neuroscience book, Your Brain at Work, which is one of my favorite books in how we are impacted by in our brain in a way that we don't really understand. And one of his factors in the SCARF model is the status. And if we think about if our status is at stake, if feedback hits on that, if I, for instance, say to you, Jason, in our openness, since you are a leader, you need to be much more open. If I go there, you will, or you can tell me how that hits you. How would you perceive that kind of feedback? Mm. I'm pointing right in your face that you are a leader, so I'm holding you accountable, your status. What I'm not saying is, if you don't fix this, I don't think you can be a leader. So that scares the out of us.
Yeah, uncertainty, you know, it shakes the stability that I'm standing on.
Yeah, and then I hit you with the face that with my opinion, just unrelated to anything you have done. I'm going right into your person, not in your behavior. And I'm claiming that you are not doing your job as a leader because I don't think you're open. And that is just so hurtful and so bad kind of feedback. So if we can't do feedback better than that, it's better to not do it. So training people in giving specific behavioral feedback that can be used for learning in a caring way, we shouldn't be encouraging feedback if we can't do it right.
Yeah, I think that's very important because I remember that I read that book, I don't know, 10 years ago. I think when the SCARP model is an acronym for, it was security, certainty, autonomy, relationship. I can't remember what the F was for.
Fairness. It needs to be as perceived as fair. It's really a fantastic model when you look at it because these are the things that scare us. If you mix that with feedback, you can really scare people really out of their focus.
Yeah. And I think feedback training is so critical. It's one of those, you know, those communication techniques, you know, clarifying expectations. One, coaching is another. And I think feedback, being able to coach and give feedback in an appropriate way. Because I think, you know, I've had two or three negotiator mediators on as guests, and they speak a lot to how we move into conflict. You know, giving feedback or negative or constructive feedback or difficult conversation is a form of conflict. But most of us have a twisted idea of conflict where it's just about a fight. But there is what you're saying, constructive conflict. And that's helps to instill and encourage and motivate a culture within a team. I was wondering, back to the SCARF model, not to harp on the SCARF model, but there's two types of values. Human beings are driven by, obviously, pleasure and pain. We move towards pleasure and we avoid pain. You speak a lot to sort of motivational, you know, moving toward values. Do you sometimes speak to sort of moving away values? Because companies don't want to feel, they don't want to feel non-green. They don't want to feel incompetent. They don't want to feel deceptive. In your work with companies, is it more sort of moving toward values you work with, what they want to become? Or are there also some of those values you sometimes talk to leaders with about what they don't want to become, what they don't want to feel?
Our methodology is built from 100 values. And this is based on the research that a lot of people have done, but in particular, Brian Hall, who used to he's passed, but his work in how values creates systems is really my key learning. And I had the pleasure to work with him for more than 10 years. And in this methodology, in this framework that we have built, we have 100 values. And values in our understanding is values is something valuable. That's why they're called values. Mm-hmm. So there are no negative values. That doesn't exist in my vocabulary or in the framework. So negative values isn't a thing, but what is a thing is the lack of values. So we always turn it around and say, what are you missing? What are your needs here? What do you need more of? So when people are, for instance, let's say they are afraid because they don't really know where they have the other people. So there's this insecurity, nervousness of failure and all that. What they lack then is more openness. So again, back to our example, if we could have more openness and more trust in our team, for instance, we would feel better. So we always pick out valuable values that they would need more of, that they could sort of order. So sometimes I ask the CEO, what would you, if you could buy any of these values, what would you buy? And if you look at it that way, here I'm presenting you.
That's
you
a great question.
We have, you here now have 100 boxes, and in each box you have this great value. Which one would you buy? And then that sort of installs an objective view on what would be more valuable for us to have. And when they say, for instance, then let's go back to or say honesty or to collaboration or innovation or whatever, then you have identified something that in an objective, unbiased way, the leader has pointed as something would give him value. And then we start to work and say, how can we install this new value? How can this be part of your culture in the future? What's needed? And how can you get people on board on that thinking?
That's an excellent way to trigger that kind of conversation, because it is. I really it like that. Yeah. I put that in my pocket. That's another tool I've learned.
It's free to use.
I'll send royalties your way.
Yeah, it needs to be specific. And I'm coming back to that, that this needs to be data driven, because it's so unconscious, and it needs to be specific. So you really know the difference between openness and honesty and trust and all these things that you need to look at. And that's why you need data.
In the concluding chapter of our conversation, Tuna and I explore what her company, Cultural Intelligence, does at the nuts and bolts level, and actually how surprisingly fast it is to get the data, to get the science, to make cognizant, clear, and concise decisions how to move forward, how to adapt, how to become more resilient in the reality of a post-pandemic world. Right now, people are talking about the great attrition. What I mean by that is that employees are just leaving companies in droves, searching for something. Or they're leaving for something, either they're running for something or they're moving towards something. You know, again, that's that moving towards, moving away values. But from your experience, what is causing this great attrition? I know that's a very general question, but why? What are these employees looking for, these professional workers? What are they moving towards or moving away from?
Gosh, I wish I had that data set that I could do this in a scientific way, but
right now it's a lot of it's a guessing game.
Yeah, it's a guessing game because we don't have people haven't been able to do the research in full yet. So I'm quite waiting for that. But what you know, if we look at it this way, mm-hmm. let's say every one of us have been now for 2 years almost on the day part of something with a dark cloud over our head. We have been shuffled into a situation where we have been made to sit at home. Our kids haven't been in kindergarten or in school. Your aunt got sick. Your husband got laid off. I mean, all sorts of worries that have happened due to this pandemic. And that impacts us in a way. And not only does it impact us, but it also makes us think the impact is in the sense of what's really important to me now. And I can't help but think that when those questions pop up, you have to have been thinking that, am I spending my time now in the way that I really want to do? Or am I in a place where I really don't see the sense of it? And now that I got to think of it, I don't really like it anymore. Maybe there's something else out there that I can pursue. And maybe there are other things that I'm now aware of. This re-awareness thing, I think, is the wave that we are, that is causing a lot of this. I'm reshuffling or I'm reprioritizing my values. And I see things that I haven't seen in this way before. And I start to think then, what's really important for me? How do I want to spend the rest of my time, or what do I want to do next? And that I think is triggered by this huge outer impact that we have been through. And I think that coming back to what role culture plays, people when they reprioritize their values are looking for new values or values in other companies. They're looking for, where would I then fit in? What am I now triggered to do? And I think that's why a lot of us now are sort of, I'm the picture that I have is we're all circling on the Ringvejen. We're all driving around there and we don't really know where, but we know that we are on our way to something. So we don't have really found the right direction yet, but we are circling and looking for the exit that is right for us. And
yeah, so, Ringvejen, for those who don't know, it's a circular highways that go around Oslo. Yeah. Companies are scrambling to stop the hemorrhaging of losing these employees. And I think it's so important for them to reach out to companies such as yours to actually understand what those values are, communicate those values, and live and breathe those values as fast as they can. I guess you guys are very busy, but when companies reach out to you, how long is the process to do this cultural discovery, if I may call it that?
No, this is the beauty, though, and in the risk. I'm not running the risk of being promotional, but finding out who.
Well,
we
I'm
are
asking
together.
You to because I think you no, but honestly, too, it's obviously it's promotional, but I mean it's very important because companies and HR and executive teams are trying to figure out how do we stop this hemorrhaging because we're losing a lot of valuable people and it's costing us money.
We have a product and it's called Culture Hackathon. And the beauty of that is you can do it in 2 hours. So this is almost unbelievable that we can switch data around in that way. And what we do is last night we had a business with 150 people in the room and on Teams in the mix. And we had all the emails we have logged that into our product. And I had a short introduction saying what are values and why are they important, very briefly. And then we run the survey with everyone in the room.
Yes.
And so we spent 20 minutes filling out the survey. Then we aggregated, of course, the product, our app, filled with data. And then we just turned on the report generator and said, let's look at who we are together while people are still in the room. And while the focus is on exactly that, who are we together and what do we need to do now? So we got this wonderful dialogue in the room and also with people on Teams with what does this really mean? So you can create this ownership of who we are together in a really neat and data-driven way in a really short time. And I think that is the advantage of using some sort of metrics to build the start of a journey of going forward.
I think that's brilliant because it's a small investment of time, but there's a huge dividend to move things forward because that's what you want. You want to get the data as fast as you can, make sense of it, and then come up with an action plan. And I think that's what companies are doing right now. Because, I mean, how do you stop hemorrhaging? That's bleeding out.
Yeah.
Well, you need to start patching up things real fast and not taking your time. It's a sense of triage, in a sense.
Yeah. I know a lot of people now are struggling to see what do we do, what do we do, and what is our new chat strategy, and how can we do this and that. But if you don't know who you are together, where you start, it's going to be a lot of iterations on how you do that. And also, if you don't know what matters to your people, people in the organization, if you haven't really got that data and truly seen in a scientific way what they believe in, what kind of values that they hold together, it's a big risk, isn't it? To making new strategies and new directions, because chances are that you may not hit that right. So in my mind, this is also a part of risk mitigation to really find out where we are, who we are right now. Let's and own that together. So and I'm sure you when you go into a company, Jason, you will probably, if you ask what is the culture around here, you will get as many answers, different answers as there are people. People have this subjective way of saying, oh, we are innovative and collaborative, and no, we are quality-oriented, or we are customer-focused, or we are a lot of things. But it's rare that they have the same picture and the true understanding of who they are together. So just creating this ownership and this shared understanding of where you start, you automatically mobilize their willingness to say, because when you ask the next question, is this a good place for us to be? They will point at, we don't have any, we have a low score on risk willingness, for instance. So when you ask us to go in a totally new direction, that's going to be very hard for us. okay, let's work on that. And that's not a dangerous thing. It's just something you work with. Let's create this risk willingness together so we can start to move in that direction. But if you don't know that and you hammer on people to take risk, all you're going to do is have them go further backwards and say, no, thank you. I will find something else.
Because this is so connected to resilience and how the brain works. I mean, a lot of people are feeling overworked and underappreciated. And so understanding the culture, creating a collective understanding, translating that into an operational definition that can be act on by everyone. And everyone says, when you ask them that basic question, what is the culture? That it resonates. Everyone comes up pretty much with the same answer. It hits at least on the dartboard because it speaks to everything. The hemorrhaging of losing employees. It deals with this great attrition we're talking about. It creates a sense of bonding, the psychological safety. And it comes back to what we started this conversation with, those fundamental values, and then to live and breathe them. And that, because that's what people are looking for. As you said, people are going to other companies. Oh, they have that value. I want to be appreciated there. I want to be respected. I want to be valued, whatever it is. And so I think what you said today is very important. I was just wondering, I'm just respectful of your time. What would be one last tip you could share with our listeners about the importance of culture or what they can do?
Prioritize to find out who you are together quickly, because a lot of things have changed that you cannot see. People look the same, their names are the same, they may have the same jobs, but they're not the same inside. So something has shifted. And as a leader, your responsibility is to find that out and operate in that sense, based on that insight.
If leaders or companies wanted to get in touch with you, what's the best way they can reach out to you and your team?
Get on the website. We are visible there. But I think that it's really a key thing for it. Time is critical to get a good solid start on your new direction. And then you need to know not only where you are, but who you are.
I'll make sure I'll include all the contact information, social media links in the podcast notes. I just want to thank you, Tuna, for your time. I think you've shared a lot, and I think what you bring and your team brings to the game is so important, especially as we come out of this. We're not totally post-pandemic, but it is. And we see how important values are, what it's making people do, leaving companies, staying with companies, that building companies and taking down silos or increasing silos.
I have one more thing that I just when you said what should leaders do, they should find out who they are together. But maybe, and you made me think of that right now, maybe the even more important question, who am I in this? What's happened to me as a leader? What's going on in my life as a leader? To maybe start there.
Yeah, and I think they can knock on both of our doors with that, because it is having that sparring partner sometimes.
It's been wonderful to be here, really. And we could talk about this for hours, I know. So maybe we should do that sometime also.
Definitely over a cup of coffee. Yeah. Not too soon, right? Thank you very much, Tuna, for your time.
Thank you, Jason, for having me. It was a lovely dialogue. Thank you so much.
You're more than welcome. Well, once again, I'd like to thank Tuna Ringstad, CEO and founder of Culture Intelligence, for joining us today. I think her advice about taking a fresh look at what the company culture is and how values have shifted, whether we like it or not, the pandemic has shaken up even fundamental values. We appreciate things at a different level now. Safety, security, respect, well-being, physical health. The sense of psychological safety are core values, and these renewed foundational values form the core of any culture. Tuna is only a phone call away, only an email away, and a lot of leaders are wondering where to start. Well, she's got the tool, she's got the experience, and she's got the science. Reach out, make a difference for the people and yourself and the company. Well, The Inside Job, it's a free resource on how to build resilience. And the only cost I ask, if you could please, share it with two people. Share it on your social media feeds. Share it on LinkedIn. It would really help to spread the word. Well, I will all see you in a week from now. Well, until then, keep well, keep strong, and we'll speak soon.
Thank you.